I, Roger Byam, was one of the midshipmen on His Majesty's armed transport, Bounty. On the 23rd of December, 1787, the Bounty sailed from Portsmouth, England, on as strange and eventful a voyage as ever befell an English ship. Her errand was to proceed to the island of Tahiti in the great South Sea, there to collect a cargo of young breadfruit trees for transportation to the West Indies. But tragedy stalked the Bounty and blighted her voyage with mutiny and death. But first, perhaps, I should explain how I became a member of the crew of that ill-fated ship. My experiences on the Bounty were a far cry from my peaceful life at Widdicombe, where I had been born, and where I had lived for almost 18 years. I remember the July day shortly after my father's death, when my mother and I were strolling in the garden at Widdicombe.
Mrs. Byam? What is it, Thacker? A letter, ma'am, from Sir Joseph Banks. Oh, Roger, you've heard of Lieutenant Bligh. Your father thought highly of him. In his letter, Sir Joseph says Lieutenant Bligh is stopping near Taunton and would like to spend an evening with us.
Well, let us ask him by all means, Mother. I was eager to meet Lieutenant Bligh because he had been with Captain Cook. Mr. Bligh's manner was agreeable and unpretentious. It was only natural that as soon as we sat down to dinner, the conversation should turn to his voyage with Captain Cook and the South Seas. Later, my mother, who was proud of my gift for languages, made mention of a prize I had won in Latin the year before. Mr. Bligh questioned me thoroughly about my studies in French, Italian, and German. Suddenly, he asked,
"Young man, how would you like to sail with me?"
"Do you mean it, sir? Would it be possible?"
"Could an inexperienced lad be of use to you on board?"
"I could put his gift for languages to good use in Tahiti. But we will be gone perhaps 2 years."
"Roger was to have entered Oxford, but I suppose that could wait. If I were a lad, I would like nothing better than a trip to the South Seas."
It was all settled. In October, I took leave of my mother and went to London, where I paid my respects to Sir Joseph Banks. He was a former explorer and much interested in the trip I was about to take.
"Mr. Byam, this is my own vocabulary of the Tahitian language, but it is most inadequate. I have Bligh's promise to give you whatever time you need to make a really good dictionary of their language. It should be of great value to traders."
"I am very much interested in languages, sir. I hope I won't disappoint you." I took the coach from London to Spithead late in November. Upon reaching my destination, I presented myself to Captain Bligh on board the Bounty.
There you are, Mr. Byam. I want you to meet Mr. Christian."
"Mr. Christian?"
"Mr. Christian is the master's mate. He will show you your quarters and instruct you in some of your duties."
Although only a master's mate, a step above a midshipman, Fletcher Christian was of gentle birth, better born than Bligh, and a gentleman in manner and speech.
"You'll be expected to go aloft with the men and..."
"Ah, Mr. Christian, there you are. What a madhouse. All these women down to see their husbands off, and the rum flowing like water. I'd like to heave the lot of them overboard. You'd better gather a boat's crew for Captain Bligh while there are still a few men sober."
"A good idea. By the way, Bayer, meet Mr. Fryer, the master."
"Ahoy there, Mr. Fryer. Have you seen Nelson, the botanist? I prescribed a drop of brandy for his rheumatic leg. It's time he took his medicine."
"He's gone ashore, Bacchus."
Mr. Christian showed me to my quarters, gave me my general instructions, and led me back on deck. There I mused on the Bounty's sails and ropes, wondering how I should go about obeying orders. It was all so unfamiliar to me. Then I heard Captain Bligh's voice, harsh and abrupt, as I was so often to hear it in the many long months to come.
"Mr. Byam, let us be on."
"Yes, sir." We did indeed sail, but got no further than St. Helens, where we were detained for nearly a month by contrary winds. Then fair winds smiled upon us again. I had made good progress in my apprenticeship and had made many friends aboard thus far. Good weather doesn't last forever, though, and I was yet to have my first taste of what the sea could really do. One night, a group of us were in the cabin of old Bacchus, the surgeon.
"A first-rate man, that Purcell. A better ship's carpenter than ever was. Should you lose a leg, Nelson, Purcell can always make you a better one."
"Very kind, I'm sure. I hope never to trouble him."
"I lost my leg in 78. I was on the old Drake. Oops, real storm's brewing. I guess we're in for it, lads. Up with you, Byam.
And that was how I came to be aloft, high in the riggings, for the first time in heavy seas, with the Bounty rolling and pitching beneath me in the mighty ocean swell.
For all of you asleep, you crawling caterpillars, look alive!
The rough weather continued for some time. Captain Bligh worked all the men so hard they were almost exhausted by the time we reached Tenerife, one of the Canary Islands off the coast of Africa.
It's been a bad voyage, Byam.
Yes, Mr. Christian.
But the men will have a chance to catch their breath in Tenerife. A shore break will do them good.
Mr. Christian!
Yes, Captain Bligh, sir.
Not one of this scum leaves the ship at Tenerife, Mr. Christian.
The captain was as good as his word. During the 5 days we lay at anchor, the seeds of discontent were sown among the Bounty crew. The allowance of salt beef was stopped, and fresh beef obtained on shore was issued instead.
The captain keeps us slaving on repairs from morn till night, and then this. The Bounty salt beef is the worst I ever ate. But this slop here must have come from the carcass of the dead mules and horses.
We go to complaint, and we ought to speak to Mr. Fryer, the master.
Captain Bligh, sir, the men have a complaint about the food.
So you and the men don't like the food, eh, Mr. Fryer? Well, you'll eat fresh beef or nothing. And you'll get less of that when we set sail for Cape Horn, because there's no way to tell how long the trip will take.
Grievances grew during the voyage from Tenerife to Cape Horn.
I tell you, this has got to stop. Not only have they cut our rations, but the cook says they're short in weight.
Mr. Samuel, the ship's clerk, or is it the captain's spy, issues provisions to the cook? I suspect Bligh is lining his own pockets at our expense.
Knowing that nothing could be done before the end of the voyage, the men bore their sufferings as silently as they could. Then one day, off Brazil, we were becalmed, and John Mills, the gunner's mate, cast a line baited with salt pork in the hope of catching a shark.
I'm gonna strike!
Heave ho, we'll eat well tonight. I can smell this cooking in the pan already. Oops, look out, John. Here comes Mr. Samuel.
Fine catch, Mr. Mills. I could use that slice you have there very well.
And catch a shark for yourself, Mr. Samuel. You get the best of the food rations as it is.
You forget yourself, Mills. Come, give me a slice. That one in your hand. It's for Captain Bligh, you know.
Oh, it is, eh? All right, Mr. Samuel. Then take it. Right in the face. No.
As had been predicted among the men, Mills spent the night in irons. Captain Bligh's fondness for the cat-o'-nine-tails as a measure of discipline was also well known, and everyone feared for Mills. One blow takes off the skin and draws blood. 6 blows at the cat-o'-nine-tails makes the whole back raw. 12 blows cut deeply into the flesh and leave it a horrible red mess.
Mr. Purcell, rig the gratings. Mr. Christian, have Mills taken over there. Mr. Morrison.
Yes, sir.
3 dozen for this fine fellow, Mr. Morrison, and see that you lay it on with a will.
Morrison was a kindly man who hated floggings. Yet, under the keen eye of the captain, he dared not lighten his blows.
I'll show the men who's captain of this ship.
Mills was a strong man, but the 18th blow broke the iron of his self-control. Old Bacchus directed that he be taken down to the sick bay and treated his badly cut back with brine.
Here, lad, take this cup of brandy. You'll be as good as new when your wounds heal.
If I had to do it over again, Bacchus, I'd still do the same thing.
The months spent rounding Cape Horn were a nightmare, as every day found Bligh's tyranny increasing. Tinkler, who was only a youngster, was kept aloft all night in a blizzard for a minor infraction of rules. Purcell received 15 days in irons when his better judgment as a carpenter conflicted with Bligh's orders. Edward Young, an officer, was given a public flogging for a minor error. One day, I could not avoid overhearing a conversation between Mr. Fryer, the master, and Captain Bligh. Mr. Fryer, himself second in command, was hardly on speaking terms with Bligh because he suspected the captain of stealing from the men.
Mr. Fryer, we will soon be in Tahiti. I desire your signature to this inventory which Mr. Samuel has taken.
I cannot sign, Captain, sir. Mr. Samuel has made no such issues of beef as you ask me to acknowledge.
You can sign, and what's more, you will. Get out on deck.
In his fury, Bligh ordered all hands on deck.
Now, Mr. Fryer, here in the presence of the men, sign this book.
Mr. Bligh, the ship's people will bear witness that I sign in obedience to your orders. But please recollect, sir, that this matter may be reopened later.
Land. I stared ahead at the tiny, motionless projection on the horizon. Tahiti at last. But it was not until the following morning that we finally anchored off Tahiti. In my excitement, I had been awake most of the night and had seen the sun rise. Captain Bligh came on deck in a rare, pleasant mood.
There it is, young man. It's been a long, hard passage, but there it is at last. We'll be here several months while Mr. Nelson collects the young breadfruit plants.
It looks like a beautiful island, sir.
Mr. Byam, I'm going to release you from all further duties on board, so you may work on your dictionary for Sir Joseph Banks. Select a tayo. That means friend. He can help you a great deal. You may go ashore whenever you are ready.
Thank you, sir. I shall leave immediately. On shore, I was greeted by one of the native chieftains.
Hiti. You midshipman, what name?
Byam. Byam.
Here comes small boat. Captain Bligh! Captain Bligh!
Ahoy there, Hitahiti.
Oh, Bligh!
You've grown a little older since I was here, Hitahiti, my friend. Though you've some gray hairs now.
10 years, eh? Plenty long time. You get fat. Where Captain Cook? He come Tahiti too?
You mean my father? He's on another trip. Hitahiti is going to tell his people that Captain Cook is my father, Bayam.
I'm afraid I don't understand, sir.
I've instructed all on board not to let the natives know that Captain Cook is dead. I believe I shall accomplish our mission quicker for their belief that I am his son. They hold great reverence for Captain Cook.
I can look back on my stay in Tahiti with nothing but pleasure. I found my tayo, Hitahiti. I stayed at his home and had not a care in the world save the making of my dictionary. Hitahiti and his daughter, Hina, were of the greatest help. Hina's children played joyfully as we discussed the words which were to be included.
To break a bottle is parari.
Parari.
To break a bone is fati. And to break a rope is motu.
Motu.
And that is enough for today. Let us sleep, Bayam. Take care, or you will crack your head and mine with too much thinking. But wait, here is a visitor.
It was Mayamiti, Hitahiti's niece, a proud, shy girl of 17. As a greeting, she touched her nose to my cheek and sniffed. I had learned that this was a common form of greeting in Tahiti. A few days later, some of my shipmates, Christian, Peckover, and Bacchus, came to visit the island. During the short walk to the house, I saw Mayamiti give Christian a sidelong glance, and I could see, too, that Christian was smitten. They made a handsome couple, the young English seaman and the lovely Indian girl. During the weeks that followed, as they strolled along or swam in the river, I saw their affection for each other grow. The kindly fate that veils the future gave no inkling of what lay in store for these two. There was one sadness during those pleasant, uneventful days. Old Bacchus died of poisoned fish and was laid to rest with Bligh reading the burial service. Without Bacchus, life on the Bounty could never be the same. But life would go on. Bligh and the company would return to the ship to auction off the dead man's effects when this was over. The relaxation of the discipline which had followed the hardships of the Bounty's long voyage now came to an end. On my visits to the ship, I began to see the unpleasant scenes. The men had brought back gifts that the friendly natives had given them. More often than not, these gifts were taken from them. John Hallett, a sneaky midshipman standing guard, demanded an ornate fan which was a personal gift to the youngest member of the crew. Another time, Mayamiti's servant brought a gift to Christian.
What have you there, Christian? Oh, so your sweetheart has sent you some pearls. Let's see them.
Mr. Bligh, these pearls were given to me for my mother. Surely you don't mean to seize them.
Pearls are highly prized on the Friendly Islands. We'll use them for trading. Deliver them to Mr. Samuel, Mr. Christian. Mr. Christian.
I refuse.
Fletcher Christian turned away from Bly abruptly, closed his hand on his pearls, and went below. Although Bly said nothing then, it was the beginning of a growing friction between them. In addition, there was increasing discontent because of rationing in the midst of plenty, and one night several of the men deserted. Captain Bly.
Yes, Byam?
You wish to see my manuscript, sir?
I can't go over your work today, Byam. Churchill, Muspratt, and Millward have deserted. Get Heetaheetee's canoe and bring them back.
Yes, sir. Heetaheetee got some of his men together and we sailed toward Tetiaroa, the most likely place for the deserters to stop. When we reached the island, the natives clustered about Heetaheetee, telling him the white men had been there but had sailed away. It was best that we spend the night on the island, and that evening Heetaheetee and I attended a hiva, where we were entertained by native dancers. I scarcely noticed the other performers. So beautiful was one girl. That girl, Heetaheetee, who is she?
She the honey, means the darling. She niece of Viahatua, great chief.
I was to be disappointed, however, because I was destined not to see Tehani again on that island, for her two chaperones guarded her constantly. We returned the next morning to the Bounty, where I reported to Captain Bly that we had not succeeded in finding the deserters. 3 weeks later, the men gave themselves up, worn out from guarding themselves from capture by the Indians. Captain Bly saw that each one of them was severely flogged. Toward the end of March, it became evident that the Bounty would soon set sail. More than 1,000 breadfruit trees had been taken aboard, and the great cabin aft resembled a botanical garden. Great quantities of pork had been salted down under the captain's direction, and a large store of coconuts, yams, and fruits laid in. I confess that I felt no eagerness to leave Tahiti. The vocabulary I had planned was now complete, and I had made good progress on the grammar. Had it not been for my mother, I believe I might have asked Mr. Bly's permission to stop over and finish all my work. So it was with great regret that I saw the Bounty at the end of March 1789, homeward bound. Many of the men seemed to share my lack of enthusiasm. Mr. Nelson said to me one day,
"Even I, a family man, am sorry to leave that paradise by him. But how must these other men feel? Particularly since the island we're anchored off now, Namuka, seems to have natives that are anything but friendly. What is more, they're thieves of the worst order."
It was true, and Fletcher Christian was concerned about it.
"Captain Bly, we need a strong guard to go ashore with the water and wood parties. I don't trust the natives here."
"I think you are afraid of them, Mr. Christian. I will send a guard. However, I am giving you strict orders that no arms are to be used. No arms, you understand?"
The following day, we were sent out under Christian's command. Hayward in charge of the cutter, and I in charge of the launch. Christian went with the shore parties. We made every effort to keep the natives at a distance, but they became increasingly bold. Towards sunset, when we were finishing our work, they rushed us. They outnumbered us 50-1, but managed only to make off with our grapnel. Fortunately, we suffered no personal losses. On our return, Bly flew into a rage with Christian at the loss of the grapnel.
"You're an incompetent, cowardly rascal, Mr. Christian. Afraid of a crowd of bloody savages while you have arms with you."
"What use are arms, sir, when you ordered us not to use them?"
Bly ignored this question and continued to rave on until Christian turned abruptly and left him. Several days after we had left Namuka, Samuel was inventorying supplies. Suddenly, Bly called all officers on deck to question them about some missing coconuts.
"Mr. Christian, how many coconuts did you purchase for your own use?"
"I really don't know, sir, but I hope you don't think me so mean as to be guilty of stealing yours."
"Yes, you bloody hound, I do think so. You're a bunch of thieves, all of you. I'll teach you dogs to steal. Before we reach England, you'll wish you'd never seen me. Mr. Samuel, you will stop the villain's grog until further orders. And instead of a pound of yams per man, you'll issue a half pound per man at all messes."
"Yes, sir."
That night I found it much too hot to sleep. Young Tinkler and I came on deck together and stood for a while by the rail aft.
"Byam, do you know that I'm the double-dyed villain? I stole one of Mr. Bly's missing coconuts.
So it's you we have to thank for our dressing down, you little rascal.
Alas, yes, I am one of the rogues and thieves. I could tell you the names of two others, but I won't.
I don't want to know anyway. With all the ship's water being used for the breadfruit trees, a drink of coconut milk is worth the risk.
Well, if I sleep over my sins, perhaps they won't seem so black tomorrow. I'll sleep right here on deck. Good night, Byam.
Pleasant dreams, Tinkler.
Oh, it's you, Byam.
Yes, Mr. Christian. I'm enjoying the sea breezes. It's pleasant up here with no one about. Mr. Christian was in a mood of black despair. I had never seen him like this before. Inevitably, our conversation turned to Captain Bligh.
Yeah, we're in his power, Byam. He considers us so many dogs, there can be no relief. There's something I wish you would do for me, Byam.
Well, of course.
You never know on a voyage like this what may happen. If, for any reason, I should fail to reach home, I'd like you to go see my folks in Cumberland.
Certainly, Mr. Christian. You can count on me.
Good. Then that's settled. Let us shake hands on it.
Well, Mr. Christian, you're up late.
Oh, Captain Bligh, I didn't hear you coming, sir.
It's very warm below, sir.
I hadn't noticed it. A true sailor can sleep in an oven if the case requires, or on a cake of ice. Good night.
You'd better get below by him and show you are a true seaman.
Tinkler, I didn't see you.
You and Christian in your gabble. I was just getting drowsy when he came along.
Did you hear what Christian said?
You mean about notifying his father in case anything happened? Yes. I couldn't help eavesdropping.
I went below and settled myself in my hammock.
All's well.
I was soon asleep.